This is Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. Yeah, you've joined me this week for our very first podcast. We're going to be talking about the world of technology. And it is a very strange world. Welcome to my world. You say, well, who is Dr. Bill and why should I be listening to his podcast? Well, I would kind of understand that. Basically, let me give you the short rundown on my background. I've got 26 years of experience in the computer industry, and it goes all the way back to the old key punch days with paper cards and key punch machines, and on up through VAX VMS operating system and Reading Deck Professional, and then on through to email and a lot of other various technologies until we get up to today, where I'm currently webmaster of a government website and just doing a lot of various things with technology and web design and hosting and things along that line. So I've got quite a few years of experience in the world of computers, and that's why I want you to join me on this podcast as we talk about the world of technology. You say, well, why Dr. Bill? Well, I have a doctorate. Actually, I have a couple of doctorates. Not bragging. I use the term Dr. Bill because that's kind of an affectionate nickname, if you will, that some of my students picked up in the university that I teach at part-time. We have Faith and Victory Christian University. And yes, as you can tell from that title, my doctorate is actually in theology, and I teach theology. So my students, as I said, call me Dr. Bill, and that just kind of picked up. And then computer curmudgeon, well, you listen to me long enough, you'll figure that out. Yeah, there's a lot of people say, what's a curmudgeon? Well, I tell you, the best way to do that is to go online and look at Merriam-Webster.com, M-W.com, and then type in curmudgeon, which is what I'm doing right now. And let's see what it says. It says that a curmudgeon is an crusty, ill-tempered, and usually old man. Well, now, I'm not that old. But, you know, hey, I'm going to be turning 50 soon, and that's not really that old. But crusty, yeah, okay, maybe so. Comes from all those years in computing. So that's what a curmudgeon is, if you're curious. And that's also the name of my blog, if you want to check that out. There's a lot of interesting articles that will tickle your fancy. They're basically things that got my attention in the tech world and other things that I'm interested in. And as most blogs are, they're just kind of whatever caught my eye and I thought looked interesting. So join me there. The website is drbillbailey.net/blog. Yeah, you heard that right. drbillbailey.net/blog, B-L-O-G. And if you go there right at the moment, as I am recording this podcast, almost live, it's live for me, it's not for you, then you'll find out that my top topic is Geek Software of the Week, PHP. Now, to give you a little explanation, what is Geek Software of the Week? Well, that's something I do every week. I put out a little tidbit, a little piece of software that I have found that interests me, that I think is exciting and innovative, and is free normally. There's been a lot of different Geek Softwares of the Week. If you look at my blog and click on the category Geek Software of the Week, you'll find out that such things as the Edwido Security Suite has been Geek Software of the Week. A program called Autoit for automating things in Windows. Again, free. All these are free. LogMeIn.com, which is a service, really, as much as software, that provides you the ability to install a little Java piece of code on your computer and then get to it from anywhere on the net, even through a firewall. Yeah, you heard me right. Even through a firewall. So if that interests you, then check out my blog for the Geek Software of the Week, LogMeIn.com. And then we've also had things like Prevx and CC Cleaner, Pod Producer, which is the software that I'm using to record this podcast, which is open source. Oh, open source. I love open source software. I'm a big proponent of open source software. And you'll find that out, and you'll find out that I understand and know that Microsoft is the evil empire. Evil empire. Yes, you heard me right. Bill Gates is there with his... Yeah. He is evil. And you'll hear me talk about that in many different examples as we you find out that the computer curmudgeon is a little down on Microsoft. Yeah, you heard me right. But I'm very up on open source. So join me as we talk about open source. Oh, the joys of open source software. There's some things out there you really want to get into. Hey, another geek software of the week a few weeks ago. It's been longer than that. Back in June was InView. If you're looking for some software to do web design, like I said, I'm a webmaster. You look for something that'll rival front page from Microsoft, WYSIWYG editor. You could spend a couple $100 and give Bill Gates some more money. You could do that. Or you could just go to InView.com, 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 and get it for free. What would I recommend? Duh. Get it for free. Yeah, that's right. That's what you need to do because it's good software. It works. You can design web pages with it. What more do you need? It's got all kinds of good built-in things. We won't get into all that. Go check it out. Check out the blog article, Geek Software of the Week Extra, on InView 1.0. It hit the 1.0 point, which as most of you that are really into open source know, that's like the gold standard. When you reach 1.0, you have arrived at a presentable software. You know, you see all this open source software that's point this and point that, and it's not quite up to one. Well, that's because whoever's writing it is saying, we're not really 100% confident of it yet. Well, that's why they do that. And then once it gets to 1.0, it's just so nice. Yes, indeedy. Well, I tell you what, speaking of 1.0, this pod producer that I'm using to record the podcast, it's 0.22. It's not even up to 1.0, but I tell you, it works great. Oh, man, you ought to check it out. Again, go to the blog, get the information. You'll be glad you did. Yes, indeed. All right. Well, the Geek Software of the Week this week is PHP. Now, PHP started out as, you won't believe this, but it started out as a personal home page. What in the world does that have to do with a server-side scripting language? Well, the reason it was called personal homepage originally is because the guy that designed it was doing it because he needed certain things done on his personal homepage. And so he designed this scripting language, and it has grown and mutated and grown to the point now that it is probably, if not the most predominant, I know one of the two most predominant server-side scripting languages on the internet. And it is part of a grouping of software that is kind of affectionately become known as LAMP, L-A-M-P, which stands for Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. Take the first letter of each one of those, Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP, you got LAMP. And I tell you, it is a light high upon a hill to all of those who understand that Microsoft is not the be-all and end-all, but open source truly can be that light on the hill with LAMP. Well, there you go. Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP. And I concentrate a little bit on PHP this week because there is a free online book available to you to learn practical PHP programming. The link is in the blog. And where do you find that blog, you ask? Well, it's drbillebaily.net. drbillbailey.net/blog, B-L-O-G. And once you go there, you will find the article in the blog and the link to the free PHP programming book. It starts from the very, very, very basics and takes you all the way on up into actually programming in PHP, hey, it's going to help you. So get out there and read about it. What's been happening this week in the world of tech? Well, we'll just take a look and find out that, what do you know? Apple has released a new iPod. This is a podcast, and here we are talking this week about a new iPod. Now, this is a little small mini iPod. Now, it's not the iPod mini. That's already been out. Now, this is the iPod Nano. You know, like nano technology had small. Got it? Okay, yeah, I'm sure you do. Well, the Apple iPod Nano is different from the other iPods in that the old iPods had actual hard drives in them. This has flash memory. So it's all solid state, no moving parts. You gotta love that, you know, because one thing, a moving part like a hard drive in a device causes heat. Gets a little warm. It also has the potential to crash. But with flash memory, it's all solid state. It's cool, it's light, and it just plain works. Gotta love that. So the new iPod Nano is available now from Apple. iPod Nano and Apple. That'll do things to your mouth. Well, anyway, you gotta just hang in there with Dr. Bill. Steve Jobs announced that this week and had a couple other announcements. iTunes 5 was announced. Now, iTunes, of course, was originally started and is, of course, predominantly a place where you can buy music on the web, downloadable songs. You pay 99 cents. You're good to go. Don't get me started on the RIAA, as it's kind of pronounced. Because they are the ones that are trying to get digital rights management involved in all of the MP3s out there. And just generally evil, 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 just like Microsoft. But anyway, I digress. The point is that iTunes was created to sell songs in a legal fashion, downloadable. And recently, with the advent of 4.9 of iTunes, podcasts were included. As a matter of fact, very soon, very, very, very soon, you will be able to hear Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon's podcast in iTunes. I'll be getting it there hopefully later today or tomorrow, somewhere in that time frame. But very shortly, you'll be able to listen to the podcast through iTunes, as well as through Odeo and Podnova and other outlets, as well as from, of course, drbillbailey.net. Yeah, you remembered that, I'm sure. Okay. But anyway, that's a couple of things that have been going on this week. Another thing that was very interesting to me is how a college student managed to win a court case against Microsoft. Oh, you gotta love that. Microsoft's army of lawyers was no match from a kid from Kent State. Check this out. David Zamos doesn't look as if he could single-handedly humiliate the world's largest software maker, but he did. He's a 21-year-old who basically bought some Microsoft software, decided, I'm going to sell this because I'm not really using it. Now, understand, this was still in the shrink wrap. It was just regular software. Microsoft says you can't do that. And so they sued him. I mean, this is not a guy that's trying to sell thousands and thousands of copies of Microsoft software. He had Office Professional, and he wanted to sell it. So he sold Windows, one copy of Windows for $91, and he sold Microsoft Office. He made a profit of $143.50, and Microsoft sued him for doing so. Well, the judge said, no, Microsoft, you're making how many billions of dollars and you're going to try to come down on this guy? I don't think so. Well, hooray for the courts finally getting something right. And this guy wins his legal battle against Microsoft. Way to go. I tell you, and by the way, you know, I wonder why he sold, Windows and why he sold Office. You think maybe he started using OpenOffice from OpenOffice.org and realized, hey, wait a minute, it's free and it does what Word does, and why do I need to line Bill Gates' pockets? OpenOffice.org. Yeah, that's a good idea. I think I'll just go that route. So then he sells his copy of Office. That could happen. Don't know that it did, but it could have happened. That's certainly a good reason to, wise up a little bit and use open source software. Yeah. All right. And on this topic of Windows, I mean, what other operating system could he have possibly run on his computer than Windows? You think maybe Linux? Linux. That's a good idea. You could run free open source Linux as your operating system and free open source OpenOffice as your word processor and office suite, and you're good to go. There you go. Doesn't cost you a dime. Gotta love that. Well, like you said, the old computer curmudgeon, he sometimes can get a little bit direct when it comes to advocating open source. But anyway, let's talk about some things that, every week as I share some ideas and things that have caught my attention, I want to take a little time to talk about things that might actually help you with your computer. Now, if you are a novice, let's say, with your computer, some of this stuff might go zing right over the top of your head. You just keep listening because you're going to hear something that's going to help you. And what helps you certainly won't hurt you. So you just keep listening, and Dr. Bill's going to have a prescription for your computer at some point. Now, this week, as kind of our main theme or whatever for the show, I want to talk about how to be safe on the web. I've got an article on my website, which is what? DrBillBailey.net. Yeah, you got it. That's right. If you go to DrBillBailey.net and then go type in S-A-F-E, safe.html, hypertext markup language, HTML, then you will get an article called Dr. Bill's How to Stay Safe on the Web or It's Good to Be Paranoid. Yes, indeed, it is sometimes good to be paranoid. Now, I want to share this article with you. It's written down so that you can share it with other people through email, spread it around the link, and tell people about it because it will help them stay safe on the web. The thing to realize about the web is it's just like the Wild West. It is untamed. And, back in the old Wild West days, you had to have your six guns. Well, there's some things you need to do to be safe online. And I have people asking me all the time, how can I be safe on the web? Now, why would they ask me that? Well, because in my 26 plus years of computers, I've never had a virus. I've never had my money scammed. I've never lost data, with the exception that I have had some disk crash, but even then I had backups, so I didn't actually lose the data. It was merely a bump in the road that I had to handle technically. So that's why some folks say, Dr. Bill, how do you stay safe on the web? Well, here are some rules to live by on the web. I'm going to give you 13 things. 13 things. Why 13? Well, because 12 is a dozen, right? But 13 is a baker's dozen. You say, what's a baker's dozen? Oh, come on. Most of you know this. Baker's dozen is you order a dozen things, and the baker adds that extra one in because he just really likes you, No, it's because he wants you to come back, and because it's a service that he's offering and kind of, sweetening it up a little bit, so he gives you that 13th donut, and that's called a baker's dozen. Well, this is a baker's dozen of things that will help you on the web. Now, this first one is a good one. Normally, in real life, being paranoid is considered a bad thing. Most people, if you say, you're paranoid, that's considered bad. No, not on the web. The attitude, be safe on the web, is that everyone is evil and everyone's out to take you for all you've got. Be paranoid. That's the key. The web is, as I said, the wild, wild west of the computing world. The only way you're going to avoid ambushes out there is using your wits. Think twice before you click on that link that promises to be some not-to-be-to-miss delight. Unless you know that the offer or whatever it is legitimate, you need to always assume it's out to get you. What you need to do is imagine an evil, sleazy bum with 2 days' growth of beard and a beer gut hanging out from his nasty T-shirt that's salivating and watching whether you're going to click that button. Because believe me, he's out there. Yep. He's the one out there programming all those phishing sites and putting all that junk on the web for you to pick up as you just merrily swing by his website. So that's the first thing you do. Be paranoid. Second thing, be wary of any pop-up or any message that shows up out of the blue. Don't click on any of the links, please. Don't click on the link. Don't click on the click here to close message. If you see a button that says click here to close, that button could be programmed to install spyware or even worse. And you don't even need to click the little X button in the upper right-hand corner to close the page. Now, most of the time, that'll be fine. But the neat little trick I want to share with you is that you can hit Control and W, Control W, and that will close them. And it won't run any weird things they may have programmed into that page. Now, if that doesn't work, you can click Control-Alt-Delete. Remember, Control-Alt-Delete, that's what you normally click to shut down. Well, click Control-Alt-Delete. That gets the computer's attention. Then you can highlight the browser, whatever browser you're using, from the list of applications in the list, click Close Task, and then that will close that program out, the browser out, and, you know, ruin any possibility of that beer gut guy from putting any junk on your computer if you happen to hit one of those ugly pop-ups. You say, brother, Bill, that is awful, you know, curmudgeonly of you to say that you need to close out your Internet Explorer just because you got a pop-up. Hey, we're talking about being safe on the web. I'm just giving you the best case scenario. You can do whatever it is that you want to do, but you need to be aware that it can have bad effects. Remember, they really are out to get you. Really. Okay. Now, number three, stay away from back alley sites. That's Gothic sites, Trey Equus, Wares, Cracks, Gamer, Cheat Codes, all of those places. Just stay away. If you go bad places, you'll meet bad people. If you go to bad places, you're liable to pick up something that you don't want to pick up. That's true in the real world and in the virtual world. Be cautious of a site that you just kind of stumble across. If you really want to check out a dubious site, then use a passive browser like OffByOne. OffByOne is a very, very, very dumbed down browser that won't leave any trace of you or your personal info at a website. It doesn't support anything that may compromise you, which would be things like Java, ActiveX, you know, all these little extra things that make our life a little easier on the web. But if you're going to a site that you're a little wary of, if you use this particular browser, OffByOne, which I've got a link to on this page, safe.html, at my website, then that will help you if you're determined to go to places you shouldn't go. But you just shouldn't go there. You know, if you're planning on doing something stupid, this is a good way to minimize the risk. Now, remember, I have some friends, the Red Wines, and one of the things they have is something called the Red Wine Principle. Remember the Red Wine Principle. If you're going to be dumb, you got to be tough. So if you're going to go to stupid sites, use a stupid browser. In other words, one that's been dumbed down. All right. Number four. Legitimate websites or emails will never ask you for private information such as credit card information or your account password unless you initiated the contact, and even then I wouldn't give it to them. There are all kinds of scams, hoaxes, fraud, identity theft, things out there that they're trying to get you to give them information, and you need to not do it. Now, any site that asks you for personal private information, by doing so, you're saying, okay, look, I completely trust you with all my bank accounts, all my money, and my life. That's the way you ought to think about it. Well, wait a minute. No. You need to be sure who you're dealing with. And don't ever give anybody your Social Security number. Only you and Uncle Sam need to know that. And you know what? I sometimes wonder about Uncle Sam. This is not information you need to be giving out. All right? Number five. block pop-up windows to reduce your risk. There is an excellent browser called Firefox. If you're not using Firefox, you need to be using Firefox. It's available from Mozilla.org, M-O-Z-I-L-L-A.org. Go to Mozilla.org, download Firefox, and don't ever again click on the blue E. That's Internet Explorer. Don't do it. Use Firefox because it has a built-in pop-up blocker. It does a great job of blocking unwanted pop-ups. That's another one of those things, kind of hard to say. Blocking unwanted pop-ups. Now, there are commercial programs that'll, you know, work as a pop-up blocker, that'll work in Internet Explorer. But now, let me get this straight. You're paying for something that Firefox does for free. How smart's that? Not very. Now, let me put it another way. Don't use Internet Explorer. Use Firefox, okay? All right, we're clear on that. All right, number six. Be cautious with most generally available webmail like Hotmail or Yahoo if you use it, because usually, actually always, it's an HTML format. It is an HTML system. A malicious message can be embedded with evil code that can spoil your whole day just as easily as a malicious web page can. Usually there's a way to delete suspicious messages without even opening them. Look for it in your mail system and test it before you need it. Of course, now if you're using Squirrel Mail through the drbillbailey.net web servers, you know, through ptnc.com or some of the other domains that we host, well, you're in good shape, because that webmail is always clean, it's always protected, it's always passed through multiple spam and virus filters. And if you fall into this category, you are highly blessed and well protected. If you're a friend of mine and want free protected web-based email, which is also IMAP enabled, so that you can use Thunderbird, which we're going to get into in a few minutes, then send me an email and I'll set you up. Dude, hey, all right. You know, hey, free email. Can't beat that. And while we're on the subject of email, number seven, if you use Outlook or Outlook Express, well, bless your darling little heart, you are in trouble. If you must do so, at the very least, and I say, at the very least, turn off the preview pane. Disable HTML messages. Look up these topics in your version of Outlook's help file, because it changes with every version that Microsoft puts out, because they are, yes, you guessed it, they are evil. If your ISP supports the IMAP mail protocol, you can have any email that lives on your server, but can be read from a properly configured Mozilla Thunderbird client from anywhere. It's much nicer. It's safer than POP3 email. And if you must use POP3 email, at least use the Thunderbird email client. That is, again, from Mozilla.org, M-O-Z-I-L-L-A.org, to have safe POP3 email experiences. You can get Thunderbird's free built-in spam blocker, lots of other bells and whistles. Again, if you have software that you can buy and try to protect Outlook, you can go out and buy things that'll help protect Outlook, but then again, you're paying money to kludge Microsoft's unsafe software. Again, I ask you, is this smart? No. Find out how to set up Thunderbird for IMAP by clicking a link that I have in the document, safe.html, at my website, drbillbailey.net. Number eight. Do not click on any links in email. No, don't do it. Do not believe messages that say they have thousands of dollars and want to transfer it to your bank account if you'll just send them your bank account number. No. Do not pass along emails that say, please pass along this email to all your friends. You know, put the finger of your hand like a gun to your head and go kabang. That's dumb. Dumb, D-U-M-B, dumb. Don't do it. You know, it's like the old thing of if your mom sometimes told you, you know, if your friends asked you to jump off a cliff, would you do it? Just because they say send this to all your friends, or you're going to be cursed with a curse, or send this to all your friends because God wants to bless them too, don't do it. Particularly if they're mouthing off all this junk. Well, I won't even get into that. But at any rate, why not pass along things like that? Because it clogs the net. It's just so much jetsam and flotsam that just gets out there and is a big mushy mess. And the net doesn't need it. Email servers don't need it. Your spam blocker doesn't need to be blocking out all this stuff that you're passing around to everybody else. So just don't pass it along. You know, somebody has too much time on their hands. They're wasting their time. You don't have to waste somebody else's time. So don't pass it along. Okay, we beat that one to death. That's universally bad netiquette. Anyway, netiquette is etiquette on the net, netiquette. It makes you look dumb to all the people that receive your email, like here's another dummy that bought into passing along to your friends. You just don't want to do it. It eats up expensive bandwidth, like I said, costs millions of dollars each year, and the message they're sending out are lying, bogus, and untrue anyway. And some are plain stupid. Let's face that. Okay, again, Forrest Gump says, stupid is as stupid does, and that's true. All right. Number 9, do not open attachments on emails. That's right, I said don't open attachments at all. You may say, but I need to open my attachments. Then you have just assessed the risk as acceptable, and you're going to suffer the consequences if you are wrong. You basically just, you know, flipped a coin and said, is it going to be the time that this attachment is going to be a virus? Now, if you know that you know that you know that a person just told you they were going to send you an attachment and they did so and you choose to open it, there's a good chance that it may be all right. But then, even if it was a legitimate attachment, they may have a virus infection, and then you click on that legitimate attachment and you get the virus. So opening attachments under any condition is risky behavior. Okay, number 10. Be careful when you download files. Now, I know sometimes you have to download a file. Sometimes you need that file. You know, I watch Star Trek fan-produced shows online. You know, newvoyages.com, hiddenfrontier.com. You know, great stuff. I enjoy getting it. I'm a Star Trek fan. Yay, Star Trek. Go Star Trek. But when I download these files, I am assessing a security risk as to whether those files have something in it. Now, everything I've downloaded has been perfectly clean from the two sites I mentioned, which is newvoyages.com and hiddenfrontier.com. But I can't say that is always going to be true. I can't say that they may get infected and didn't mean to. So you always have to be aware if you download a file, you're kind of spinning that little cylinder in your gun. Russian roulette. You got to be aware of that. Okay, but you know, sometimes you got to take these risks. Be careful, though. Consider the source where you got them. Be careful with any file, even those that you consider from a trusted site. Remember, they're definitely out to get you. If you download and run a file, you're running a risk of losing all your data every time you do. So now, isn't it worth a few extra moments of, am I sure I know whose site this is and that they're legitimate? And oh, by the way, did I mention that they're out to get you? Yeah, okay. Number 11. This is a universal truth. Da-dum! Microsoft products are bloated, full of security holes, and generally extremely poor examples of computer programming. Okay? That's a universal truth. When possible, use any other software than Microsoft. Any other. If you need an excellent word processor, spreadsheet, and presentation package, what's the one I mentioned earlier? OpenOffice.org, OpenOffice.org, and version 2 is going to be out any day now. That's in quotes, any day now. But version 2 beta is already out there, and I'm already using version 2 beta, and it works fine. And guess what? They're free. Now, you can pay huge, massive amounts of money for Microsoft programs, or if you stole them, or got them from a copy of from a friend that stole them, then guess what? You're running illegal software. You don't have a licensed copy on the machine that you're using. This will cut short your blessings in life because stealing is bad. Let's all say together, bad. Running free open source software is, everybody say together, good. You can run totally free, legal, open source software on all your machines, multiple machines. You can have as many computers as you want. Now, your path to your blessings are open. Don't you feel better? Now, for instance, early on in the program, I mentioned a WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get, web editor. Now, you can buy one from Microsoft. Remember I mentioned front page, a couple $100. Or you can use InView for free, nvu.com, and future upgrades are also free. Duh. By the way, the page here, safe.html from drbillbailey.net, that page is totally written using InView. Not a Microsoft piece of software touched the code at all. It is pure. Okay. I'm kind of beating that horse as well, huh? All right, number 12. You must use good antivirus on every computer you use. And this is so basic, I shouldn't even have to say it. Now, you may say, look, it costs me X dollars every year to keep it current. Well, guess what? There is free, excellent software out there that allows you to run an antivirus, and it's good stuff. AVG antivirus, free for home use. Avast antivirus, that's like pirate. Avast, you mateys. Avast antivirus, free for personal use. Go to their sites. There's links on this page, safehtml.html, and on my website. I almost added something there, but it's not. safe.html on my website. That page has links to those packages. They are free, so don't be dumb. Be safe. There you go. And then finally, number 13, protect yourself from adware and spyware. There are free tools. The ones I'm about to mention, all of them are free. Use them. Update the signatures. Use them regularly, at least once a week. I use them almost every time I open my computer, my laptop. I just run them. It's become a habit. I check and make sure Spyware Blaster is updated, which will be in the background protecting you from spyware. I use Spybot Search and Destroy, and I use AdAware. Again, there are links on this page, very bottom of the page, to these programs that are free. Using these are not an option. And remember, yeah, they're out to get you. Be paranoid. The computer you save will be your own. Oh my, I tell you, I'm running long in this podcast. I'm going to have to cut it off at this point, but I tell you what, I'm going to be coming back each week with what I find on the net that looks interesting and some software tips that'll help you, like today's being safe on the web. I tell you what, join me as we explore the world of technology together. This is Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. Be safe on the web. Don't let them get you. By the way, Dr. Bill would love to hear from you. Go ahead and send me email at drbill@drbillbaily.net. drbill@drbillbaily.net. Enjoy the web. Don't let them get you.